Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking to Ryan Grimm, the author of the excellent new book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, The Secret History of Getting High in America. Ryan, what is the 10-second version of your book?
10-second version, Americans have always gotten high, we always will get high, and we will always try to stop other people from getting high.
Right.
That's probably the end.
And there will be many tears in the process, right? What in doing the research for the book, what was the most surprise? I mean, which is fascinating because you come from a starting point that most people want to ignore, which is the long history of intoxication in these United States as well as the rest of the world. What was the most surprising fact that came out in your research that you had no idea of in terms of a secret history of getting high?
Yeah, just the fact that our history is so layered and textured and deep was probably the most surprising thing. The greatest revelation to me was when I started studying the temperance movement in the 19th century, which succeeded to a large degree in reducing drinking by a significant amount. But at the same time, using opium import statistics and other things, you can show that just as drinking was going down, opium use is coming back, is coming up. And then opium use ends up leading to this just cornucopia of pharmaceutical, like, utopia for drug users in the 1890s, which, of course, you know, collapses into a dystopia, and then they end up banning everything. But so in a very real way, it was this temperance movement that ushered this whole thing in.
Right.
And that was the most surprising thing to me, just the connection between the two contradictory parts of our nature.
Here is a question. I mean, American culture in virtually across every dimension is Manichaean. I mean, everything is black and white, or we tend to extremes. Is there hope for a system of responsible drug use or intoxicant use in America, or is it always going to be, on the one hand, you have teetotalers, and on the other hand, you have addicts or wets and dries? I mean, do we have a workable history of moderate drug use?
I think marijuana will be the thing that might break our history of this black and white, wets and dry thing. Because throughout the history, a drug comes in, we embrace it. There's no stigma attached to it. It's something that medicine or God has provided to us. It's fine. Then overnight, it becomes not fine.
Right.
It becomes criminal. Then something new pops in. And then the other drug, say if it was cocaine in the 1890s, it disappears. And then when it reappears in the 70s, we go through the whole cycle again.
But where for instance, cocaine in the 70s, it was chic, it was non-addictive, it had no known side effects, et cetera, and then 5 years later, it's the beginning of a new panic.
Right, you had people testifying before, medical researchers testifying before Congress in the early 80s, late 70s, that there was nothing wrong with it, like, go for it, use it. Carter's drug czar said, hey, we might even think about legalizing this.
Right.
And so they had forgotten what had happened in the 1890s, but it's different with pot. Since the 60s, it's been part of our consciousness, despite all the efforts to get rid of it. So at this point, you know, anybody that is in their 60s or below has an experience with marijuana. Either they've used it or they know somebody who's used it, and they know that the sky hasn't fallen as a result of it. And as that continues, everyone will will have a more mature, like, gray, shade of gray type of relationship with it.
Do you think we're also at a point where, for the first time since these surveys have been taken, a majority of Americans say they're in favor of legalizing marijuana? Medical marijuana is in over a dozen states. Places like California are actually talking about legalizing marijuana. They've already legalized and had a long-running feud with the federal government. Is marijuana likely to be legalized within the next 5 years?
It might happen. There are a couple of interesting things going on. In the late 70s, which was the peak of marijuana use in America, you still only had 20-some 30% favoring legalization. You had more people smoking it than people who were in favor of making it legal to smoke it. But now you have more people who favor legalizing it than actually smoke it. The most interesting thing to me is a couple of surveys that were done about people's attitudes toward legalizing medical marijuana. They asked a two-tier poll. They said, do you support legalizing medical marijuana? and people overwhelmingly in the states where this was done said, yes, I support it. Then they said, do a majority of people in your state support legalizing medical marijuana? And only some 20 to 30% said yes. So everybody thought that they were the enlightened one, and their neighbors are these, you know, reactionary rubes who, you know, just want to, like, you know, rip up their pot plants from their backyard. Now what happens is that when it actually gets legalized in, say, California, medical marijuana gets legalized, when they poll again, it polls 10, 20 points higher than it actually got in the voting booth. People realize, oh, I'm not the only enlightened one here. Or they realize this isn't so bad. So once people realize that they're not alone in their kind of libertarian sensibility towards marijuana, then people start talking about it, and then it just steamrolls because there's no legitimate argument against it.
The modern drug war, with that phrase and whatnot, dates back to Richard Nixon. He was terrible on drugs. Jimmy Carter, not so bad. Gerald Ford, not so bad. Reagan, not good. First Bush, not good. Clinton, not good. Second Bush, not good. Obama, is he going to be good or bad?
It'll depend on the rest of his agenda. And that's one of the things I read about in the book, that drug policy is like the stepchild of government policy. It is always the last thing that is taken into account, whether you're talking about going to war in Afghanistan or Nicaragua or passing a trade deal with Mexico. It doesn't matter. The drugs are secondary. So if Obama can get, say, health care passed and he really gets rolling and he's got a lot of political capital, then he's going to be progressive. He's going to push forward on needle exchange. You know, he's already been better than anybody else on medical marijuana just by not arresting people.
Right.
So it will depend on how much capital he's got to spend on it, I think.
So in other words, it's looking pretty bad for marijuana.
That's right.
Talk a little bit, how did you get interested in this topic?
It was a total accident. Around 2001, I realized that I hadn't seen LSD in several years, or in several months, and I started looking. And so I wrote a story about it in 2004 about how there was no acid left. Got more emails on that story than any I've ever written before or since. Nobody said they had it. Mm-hmm. And it indicated to me that there was a passion out
there. There
was a market
waiting to be served. So you took a few years off, made a lot of money on acid, and
exactly.
Then you came back with a book. What do you think is the – do we have a drug problem in America, or do we have a drug prohibition problem in America?
There isn't a drug problem in the sense that it hurts our GDP or it causes unemployment or it has any other impact on the structure of our economy.
Although there are people who have substance abuse issues.
Absolutely, yeah. And almost everyone knows somebody right. who has a substance abuse problem. But our country still goes on. It's not a crisis for the country. It's a crisis for that family. Mm-hmm. And it's a crisis for that person. Now, where we do have a structural threat to the country is with what you said, with prohibition. The spending, you know, $40 billion on prison costs, the cost to the economy of people who are less employable because of drug charges, or the cost of enforcement itself, you know, where cops are out chasing, you know, baggies instead of actual crime. There, it has a real possibility of undermining the structure of the economy and of the society. So I think that's why you're most likely to see a change to prohibition, because I see it as kind of a prohibition is kind of a luxury of good times. You know, it's all fun and games to lock everybody up when you have budget surpluses and when the global financial system isn't collapsing.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today at Reason TV. I'm Nick Gillespie. We've been talking to Ryan Grimm, the author of the excellent new book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, The Secret History of Getting High in America.